I've been fascinated lately by electroporation, well, lately being the last 5 years or 6 years. I think this is going to be really disruptive, and I'm going to try to explain what it is about to you today. This is a current that we use to destroy cardiac cells, and in some ways it's getting us back 25 years ago or 27 years ago. When I started ablation, I used fulguration, and you may think that it has some commonalities here. It's in fact very, very different. So yes, we're using some electric field that is very high voltage. You're going to see that it ranges between 1,000 volts to 2,000 volts, typically what is used in current systems. But the modalities are very different and the impact is very different. So that field is applied between two electrodes. And of course, you can deliver either in a monopolar mode where you have electrodes and a return pad in the back of the patient, or in bipolar mode. And bipolar is, I think, preferred because it's going to generate much less muscular contractions. And this is showing you some of the simulations you can run using dedicated software. In this case, we've been using the PVAC catheter by Medtronic to make this simulation. And you see in red, the cycles are the model for pulmonary veins. And you see in red the impact of the deliveries on a 4 millimeter thick wall, atrial wall. And you see that by increasing the voltage from 1,000 to 1,250 volts, you get bigger lesions. That's the first thing you can play with. But electroporation is offering a lot of parameters that you can play with, and that will very, very deeply impact the results. And this is another simulation that we've been making with the catheter that Farapulse, which is a startup company that I work with, has been developed. And that is a little more, I think, let's say, tuned for pulmonary vein isolation using electroporation. And you see that you get the same distribution, but you can manage to get something that is much more homogeneous and probably a larger lesion to encircle the pulmonary veins. I told you there are many parameters you can play with, and among them, probably a very important one is the type of pulses you use. They can be monophasic or biphasic. And this is a major difference. Now, most systems that are currently tested are using monophasic pulses, but biphasic are superior. They are associated with much less muscular contractions. You don't need to use paralytic agents or general anesthesia with the biphasic mode. Well, it depends also on other parameters, and the duration of each pulse is one of them. But there are ways to do that. Now, again, you may think that this is close to fulguration. It's not, definitely not. So I put you a defibrillator waveform on the upper left, and you can see that in this case you have a monophasic type of wave that is long. Typically these defibrillator waveforms are 6 to 10 milliseconds, and for that reason they would stimulate a lot the muscles, and the patients, as you know, are jumping on the table. Now, doing that for one shock is probably not a big issue, but if you have to do that for 30 or 40 deliveries to isolate the veins, it really becomes an issue. So these pulses are key to the success and to the characteristics of the lesions. You can have monophasic or biphasic, and the biphasic pulses can be balanced or not. They need to be repeated in trains, and those trains are also repeated. So typically at present time, with FARPULSE, we're delivering five times to give one lesion, and we give eight lesions per vein, six to eight lesions per vein. Now, this is super fast. We're talking about pulses that are microseconds duration, not milliseconds. And so altogether, the total duration of energy delivery for one patient to isolate the four veins is less than 1 minute. So it's very short. And if you look at the energy in joules is in fact much less than what you would need with RF. So it's very high voltage, but because the duration is very short, it results in a, very limited amount of energy that is transmitted to the tissue. Now, how does that work? Well, we're probably very lucky being electrophysiologists when it comes to electroporation. What I mean is that cardiac cells are polarized, and this is certainly an advantage and explains some of the tissue selectivity that has been observed and that we are so lucky to have. On an even more basic aspect, you know that the cell membranes are made of lipid bilayers, and these lipids have a polar head and a non-polar tail. And so when you apply an electric field to this type of structure, it will react by aligning these polar heads to the field that is applied to the cell. And by doing so, it will create some pores in the cell membrane. And if these cells, if these pores are big enough, they will be permanent. They will not close. And then this will translate into cell death. This is showing you one of the parameters that impacts the formation of those pores, which is the duration. And again, this is pretty old and has been made using monophasic type of deliveries. And you see that the duration are long as compared to what is used now. But yet it gives you an idea that by increasing the duration of the pulse, and the same would apply to increasing the voltage, you make bigger holes in the cell membrane, and therefore you are more likely to get irreversible electroporation. Electroporation has been used for decades by the food industry. French fries, for example, are submitted to this process so that they would good to eat for a longer period of time. It has been used in medicine as well for more than 20 years, particularly in oncology. It's interesting to open holes in a cell to get some genes modified or to get some drugs in there. It has also been used just to kill cells because it has the property to target preferentially a certain type of cells as compared to others. And when you have a tumor that is involving some large arteries that you want to protect or nerves, then it's good if you have a type of cell that is having a lower threshold for destruction as compared to the structures you want to spare. So it's very helpful with this aspect. And This is why we are very lucky being electrophysiologists. The myocardium is among the most sensitive type of cells to this type of current. So they have units, 400 volts per centimeter is the sensitivity of the cardiomyocytes to this energy. And if you look at the thresholds for the other type of cells that are around cardiomyocytes, well, red blood cells, vasculosmooth muscle, endothelium, it's more than four times higher threshold. So you have plenty of safety margin to target the cardiomyocytes and spare those cells. Very interesting. Same applies to the nerve. It's close to 4,000 volts per centimeter, almost 10 times bigger than the threshold for myocardium. The esophagus would be in that range too. Very interesting, of course. And doing PVI with this energy and not having the risk for esophageal fistula in the back of your mind is incredibly comfortable. So again, among the advantages, and because this energy is non-thermal, in fact, we made measurements, and the increase in temperature at the tissue electrode interface or in the tissue is less than 1 degree. So it's really non-thermal. But if you increase the voltage or if you increase the duration, then you get thermal injuries. But again, by fine-tuning all the parameters, it's really non-thermal. I think it has some advantages. You know that even if we rarely get PV stenosis, we get some reduction in that diameter. And typically, when you use thermal energy, the proteins would react by shrinking. And I think would shrink the left atrium doing pulmonary vein isolation. Probably not so much when it comes to PVI only, but definitely if we have to add linear lesions to that. So the risk for stiff LA syndrome or pulmonary vein stenosis is probably much less using this energy as compared to thermal energies. It's super fast, of course. Microsecond pulse, of course, you have to gather them. It's more than one, but yet it remains super fast. And lately, the patients we did in Bordeaux or Prague, the dwell time of the catheter in the left atrium was about 15 or 20 minutes. So it's really super fast. And finally, the most important, in my opinion, and I think this is why electroporation is likely to become the by default energy and be really disruptive for the field, is the safety and the tissue selectivity. Not having the risk for phrenic nerve or even more importantly, esophageal lesion is key. This is showing you some of the catheters that have been used with electroporation. Some have been developed by different industry. This big loop here down there is the initial version of the Farapulse catheter. At first, the idea was to use that with a subxiphoid approach to go in the pericardial space and go around the all four veins and create an isolation that would also include the posterior wall. This has been pretty quickly abandoned. It was a bit too complex, but the tool is still used in surgery, and it gives very good results. This is one of these patients with mitral stenosis in really big LA, more than 6.5 centimeters on the anteroposterior echocardiogram, and with less than 1 minute, you get this big part of the left atrium, basically the half of the left atrium that is isolated. It's really fascinating. And definitely a tool that could be used by surgeons on a routine practice one day. Now, we've been using this energy in dozens and dozens of animals before getting to patients, of course, and we've been able to confirm some interesting things for patients. The first one is that typically, if you get acute isolation, you can maintain that. And we've been doing some systematic remapping in these animals, swine, about 3 months after the index isolation, and confirmed that it was stable lesions. Confirmed also that we were not destroying the architecture of the tissue and not impacting the arteries. Some of our colleagues have even directly delivered on the LAD in animals and documented the absence of lesion. There is absolutely nothing histologically after this kind of maneuver at the level of energy that is used to kill cardiomyocytes. And then we did patients, of course, and this is the first series of patients where you can see that the veins are isolated, no question. There is no signal left. It's visible also on the remapping with the voltage color coding here. This is one of the early patients we did in Bordeaux. We systematically map and remap at 3 months, and I think this is really important. There are plenty of reasons for patients to fail an AF ablation and to have recurrences of AF. Some of them do have PV reconnection and others don't. It's super important to understand what is the proportion, because this is in fact two very different problems. There is the problem of being able to isolate the veins durably, and the problem of being able to identify all the sources for fibrillation, two very distinct problems. One of the most fascinating aspects is how it looks like on MRI. We did a series of post-ablation acute MRI. This is within 2 hours from the index procedure using electroporation. And I've never seen that with any other modality. You see how dense and homogeneous it appears on late gadolinium enhancement. And this is very, very consistent for those patients. That's another view where you see, again, a very, very dense and bright atrial wall after the isolation. And very important, there is absolutely no late GAD uptake on the esophagus, nothing. We've never seen a single patient with this. Unlike what we see with cryo and RF, and we have a paper that we are writing currently on that topic, it's absolutely fascinating to see that very often we would see some late GAD enhancement of the esophagus using cryo, but never again with electroporation. The same comes through with RF. In fact, we have a good 40% of the patients that are showing some late GAD enhancement in the esophagus using cryotherapy. Again, pretty easy to and fast to isolate the permeable veins with this energy, but it has not always been like that. And so we started doing patients 2 years ago. And on this slide, you can appreciate that when we were using monophasic type of waveform, we had to use general anesthesia and paralytic agents, and we've got a very modest 18% durable permeable vein isolation. So very, very limited results. But by fine-tuning this waveform and by using biphasic, we could end up to 100%. Now, that was only on 20 patients. With more patients, this has a little bit dropped down, but we're still over 95% of durable isolation. And again, this is checked by remapping systematically every patient with or without symptoms at 3 months after the index delivery. Again, this gives you an idea of the different parameters, but only a very superficial idea, because of course all the secrecy and the intellectual property is here in the generator and in the pulses that are sent to tissue. So of course the company does not communicate this kind of details, and I completely ignore them as well. You can see that we've been playing with monophasic 900 volts to begin with, and then biphasic, and it seems 2,000 volts is what we need with the type of waveform we're using now. Now, if you compare that to few studies who have been systematically remapping patients 3 months after PVI, you see that using RF mostly, the results are not as good, definitely not close to 95%. The best are approaching 80%. I think that if we do a reasonable mean over centers, we are around 50%, maybe 60%. It's getting better with contact force and this kind of refinement, but we know that PVRE reconnection is a major limitation to what we do at present time. An interesting advantage of this energy, and it probably explains why we get stable lesions, is that it's also resilient to loss of contact. And if you have a distance that is not too big between the electrode and tissue, you will still get a lesion in tissue. You are creating a field of electricity around the electrodes, and every cardiomyocyte that is within this field will die. And even with a 2 millimeter gap, as simulated here, you see that you start to see some shrinking of the lesion, but it's still there and still complete and transmural. And this is showing you the latest results in a series of over 80 patients that Vivek Reddy, Pat Nozil, and ourselves in Bordeaux did put together. We get very good clinical results as expected, but again, I value more the 3 month systematic restudy, because this is where you know if the veins are isolated or not, and this is what should be used as a gold standard to assess any new technology, in my opinion. Now, I don't know if 3 months is enough, but I think it's reasonable. A very interesting observation that Vivek also published this data is that there's absolutely no change in the permeable vein diameter using this energy. Again, rare PV stenosis with cryo or RF, but some degree of shrinking is common. We don't see that with this energy. One thing I'm very pleased with is that we can create linear lesions pretty easily with this energy. This is showing you a roof line that was achieved just by ensuring some of the deliveries with a vertical position of the catheter. This is in the right superpulmonary vein. This is in the left superpulmonary vein. And you can see that the overlap is enough to create this nice roof line. We also did a few mitral isthmus line. It seems to be pretty easy, super fast, of course. We sometimes have to move the catheter a little outside the vein to really get the mitral complete. But it's very doable, and for those of you who know how challenging it may be in some patients, it's a good news that we can do that easily. This is the demonstration of the block. If this is not enough, we will have the opportunity probably to use a focal catheter that the company has recently developed. It's shown here. It's much smaller than the permeable vein catheter, and it's applied here in a swine on the roof of that swine. You can appreciate that we got a pretty long linear lesion, 66 millimeters here. This was done with five sequential deliveries, and this is even more frightening intercaval posterior right atrial lesion, again in swine. This one is really big. In fact, swine have a different impedance as we do. It's a lower impedance by 20%, so they get more energy to the tissue. And we had to compensate to get similar results in patients, in fact. So I'd like to conclude that this energy allows safe and fast PVI, and we have now over 130 patients treated with tissue selectivity, and I think this is really, really a major advantage. The lesions are very homogeneous as they appear on MRI, with no esophageal lesions, and I did not mention that, but Vivek and Pat Nozil did some systematic endoscopy and found absolutely no changes in the esophagus of those patients. The two centers did some brain MRI in about 15 patients, I think, and so no changes as compared to before deliveries. Linear lesions are possible, which is a very good news. And if it becomes needed, we will have access to a focal atrial, catheter to able to create linear lesions or to do some VT ablation, because I think this is also of interest. And so my last comment is that I think for the first time we are in a position where we can slightly overpower the deliveries so that we ensure long-term success without changing anything to the safety. Thank you very much for your attention.
Pierre, thank you very much for this excellent update on this really intriguing new energy source. It's really fascinating, and I'd like the audience, were there any questions for you? I may start. Oh, there's one. Hans, please go ahead.
Hi, Hans.
Congratulations, superb work. No, it's Thank really you. Outstanding, and we will hear a lot of that in the future, I'm very sure. No? We are also working with the Globe catheter on that for some time, and also have a fantastic animal experience with that. I will present that next week for the first time in the AF symposium in Washington.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, my question, Pierre, is when we were working with the Globe, the only point where we need to take care about complications is also bubble formation. So that is also part of the recipe. You know? Could you comment from
your
side on that?
Yes, of course. So thank you for asking. So this is typically what happens if you use, monophasic is more prone to that. And also the duration of each pulses is very important here, the voltage. If you use this type of recipe, you're getting closer to the fulguration in bubble formation and arcing and thermal elevation are typical of this kind of strategy. And in fact, I think that's what makes the value of what FirePulse has been developing for the last 7 or 8 years is the generator. And they spend a lot of resources there and ages away from the typical defibrillation waveform. So I think it's really, really important.
Thank you. Again, excellent.
Thank you very much, Hans.
You mentioned wall contact. You said there may be wall contact, but maybe not. How important is wall contact when you use this energy, and how does this influence your result? What is your idea on that?
Well, the thing is that when you use RF, if you have no contact, you have no lesion. It's really critical, because the current has to go from the electrode to tissue. In absence of contact, everything goes into the blood. Here, it's different. You create a field around the electrodes. And if these fields include your atrial wall, you're going to get a lesion irrespective of the contact. It's not to say that the contact is not playing any role. Of course, it does. But still, it may be forgiving, and you may be away by 1 or 2 millimeters and yet get a complete transmural lesion there, because your field has been extending over the atrial wall. So it's significantly different from RF or cryo. Cryo is the same.
Okay.
very good contact.
Thank you. Frank, please.
Conduction system or the normal myocardium?
Yes, there are differences. It is very different. And the impact is very different. There has been some work done by Sam Asirvatam at the Mayo Clinic on the conduction system. You can hit the conduction system, but at the level, it's more resistant than the cardiomyocytes. Generally speaking, so you would have to use more energy to kill it, and you get more often transient lesions.
I just ask because of parahistine pathways also. So
you mean using this energy for parahistine pathways? Yeah, definitely.
I'm a fan of you and the technology. So thanks. Tell me the couple of things: scar versus no scar. So for redos or the ventricle, your sense already with some preliminary studies?
No, not much data here. My bias is that it doesn't change the architecture of the tissue. So I suspect the scar would not be impacted by the deliveries, but you would kill the cardiomyocytes, which again are the most sensitive type of cells.
So it's not a matter of penetration that you can tell.
Should be no problem.
So just two things. So when you did your monophasic, biphasic, elevated energy levels, did you have animal data that guided you? Was there a species difference in terms of, because you sort of worked your way up, and where does the pig heart, or is it more responsive? Is that why you start out? Or
it's a little bit more responsive.
Did you just start off less,
It's a little bit more responsive. And but I think the same probably applies with what we do with RF. It has been our experience with RF. Generally speaking, you have to use a little more energy in patients to get similar results. And it was the case there.
Yeah.
I think we or they had to build pretty much all the knowledge, because
everything
in the literature has been done with kind of primitive waveforms, most of them being morphasic, etc.
I'm sort of looking to see if there's some clue to say there's differences in species that may then make us run into troubles, in different patients, right? Because patients with less fibrosis or more fibrosis.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
This becomes a big deal.
And that's a very interesting question, and honestly, I'm not sure I know the answer. I think it's less sensitive as compared to the other energies that we have at the present time, generally speaking. Now, very clearly using RF, I have the feeling that some patients are resistant more than others.
Yeah.
Probably one of the reasons is the impedance. We have patients with higher impedance where it's a nightmare to get something completed.
Right.
Hopefully, it's not going to be the case with electroporation. I think it's going to be less sensitive to that.
Right. Well, it looked like, at least because you were taking all comers with your clinical experience,
we were.
So that's impressive. The last question, though. You had the one graph, 2,000 volts was the threshold for starting to get vascular changes. Was the impact, you think, for getting perfect isolation, the beneficial effect of getting small blood vessels?
No, but it's not 2,000 volts. It's the
it's a
per centimeter. Yeah, so it's quite different.
Never mind. I just saw and wanted to determine whether there was any effect on the microvasculature that was beneficial. Have to do it to.
No, we haven't seen any, and we did a lot of histologies, so we're pretty confident that it's.
It's so fascinating. So this causes a lot of questions, a great discussion. Maybe the last question from my side: how do patients tolerate that? Do you have? Do you need general anesthesia? You mentioned muscular contractions, high energy, as we heard. So
that's
how do
very
they tolerate?
Important. Thank you, Stefan. So what we do at the present time, and I think it's going to be what is going to be routine practice, is that we do boluses of propofol, and because it's super fast, you don't need much. So typically 80 kilos patient, total procedure would be less than 20 cc of propofol. We do that before each vein, roughly. And there is no general anesthesia, there is no intubation, and there is no paralytic agents needed because of that type of waveform.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Pierre, again.